Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. And just remember, Gon Gon always wins. Cast. I'm Zach Birchie. We got a really special show this week. I am joined by two very good friends of mine and former colleagues at the storied former publication Anime Insider Magazine from Wizard Entertainment. Joining me, second time I think on the show. You were on years ago, right, when we were first getting started. But it is senior editor, now currently, formerly Topless Robot, formerly Wizard Entertainment, currently senior editor at IO9. It's Rob Bricken. Hey, Rob.
Hey, sir. How's it going?
It's going. This should be interesting.
Interesting is certainly a word that does not have any value judgment attached to it, and thus is accurate to describing what's about to happen here.
I'm surprised your higher-ups at IO9 are allowing you to do something on Sundays aside from watch Game of Thrones.
Luckily, Game of Thrones has covered someone else, so I have Sundays off now that Walking Dead is done, so that's great. Although Friday nights is now Grimm, which is not... It's better than I thought, but my expectations were pretty low.
That's a relief. That's a relief. I've never seen it myself. Okay, and formerly of Anime Insider... actually took over the magazine when Rob departed, and she currently works at NECA Toys. It's Summer Mullins. Hey, Summer.
Hey, Zach. What's going on?
Gonna take a little trip down memory lane here. So the three of us, well, you two specifically, me less so, because I was only there for about 2 years, kind of represent the entire history of this magazine as it existed. And I figure, you know, Wizard's dead. Garib Sheamus is off giving his dead-eyed stare somewhere else. It's been a long time since the magazine's even been in print, so I figure now's as good a time as any to run through the history of this thing and talk about what it was like to work in gasp print, back in the day. Rob, this whole thing, I was discussing this with Summer. You basically gave birth to Anime Insider, right?
Well, yes and no. So I got hired summer of 2001, and in between interviewing for a position at Toy Fair, actually, associate editor, and then arriving in New York and starting my job, Wizard had just finished one of their specials that they occasionally did. Like, they did some, just random one-shot magazine. They did some Beanie Babies. They did on some stuff that were less lame. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they have a few of these. Maybe they did, a Magic the Gathering one before Inquest started or something like that. And anyway, the anime was hip and happening in, you know, North America 2001. Right. So they did that, and they had finished it before I arrived on my first day. And just a couple weeks after that, or maybe the first month, I got the issue. And honestly, I'd been a huge fan of Toy Fair all my life, the 5 years beforehand. Loved it. I mean, Toy Fair was my dream job. And I knew Wizard sensibility and everything like that, too. So I thought, oh, my God, a Wizard version of anime of an anime magazine by Wizard. This sounds right up my alley. And I don't think it was very good. Now, as you know, Zach and Summer, I'm hardly the most hardcore of anime fans. But as I always said, that I was the only person at Wizard for a long time who knew why Goku's hair turned yellow. So I looked at this thing, and I'm trying to think of all this stuff. It was really basic, but not basic like in a good way. I mean, we always had the sensibility we wanted to appeal to new fans, younger fans, like the ones with the, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon, the basic stuff, but then, you know, have something for hardcore fans too. It was basically a magazine for anime fans, or not fans of anime, excuse me, like an anime 101 for wizard people. So there was a lot of like weird comic stuff in it. Like they do the best manga of all time. And then they'd include like Pat Lee's Dark Minds cartoon, which totally, I think is Canadian or something like that. It just has the manga style. So yeah, it was really super basic. And I thought, well, I don't think so. So I kind of, they knew me kind of as an anime guy, and as they started letting me do some more stuff to it, editing some stuff, and then kind of got put in charge of it, taken off Toy Fair, as I think when the magazine went bi-monthly, and then eventually went monthly. It was a weird saga of trying to get content in there that wasn't just the Dragon Ball Z Gundam on Toonami crowd,
right.
Which again, that's hardly the worst thing in the world. I mean, we got a lot of shit for like, God forbid, pandering to kids who were not like hardcore wearing, something obscure. But I thought we did especially by the end, we did a good job of mirroring, introducing things to new fans and still giving something hardcore fans that they weren't getting somewhere else. So, I mean, that sums up an incredibly lengthy, sometimes traumatic struggle of 5 years until I, you know, got the fuck out of Dodge into like what, 3 or 4 minutes. But that was kind of how it started, I guess. Very slowly, very haphazardly. It took a long time for them to get convinced that an anime magazine would work at all. As a monthly magazine, and I thought, like, being a monthly magazine, why are you even bothering? I mean, we're just like randomly in stores. Who's got that attention span, you know? So
yeah. Well, in those earliest days, so there was a special, and then it became Anime Invasion, right?
No, the first one was Anime Invasion.
Okay, right.
And when the magazine launched proper as quarterly, eventually got it to bi-monthly, and then eventually got it to monthly. I think monthly happened around issue 17 or so.
The one I've got sitting next to me is issue 23, and it's got the big now monthly in the corner. I think this was also the first issue of the redesign. So
the redesign one, is that when it happened? Okay.
It was issue 22. I've got that one. It was the first monthly issue that had, of course, Naruto. Surprise there on the cover.
Well, I look, again, it's hardly, you know, I don't think we were ever necessarily won any of the hardcore fans over with the amazing, but you're going to put it through. That's just, even if the print magazine industry weren't totally dying, why wouldn't you put like the most popular anime character on the planet at that point on the cover? So it was Anime Invasion until, I don't even remember if you got your issues out. Maybe that was 17 or so, or like when we went monthly or something. All I remember is very distinctly is that someone finally bothered to look up the copyright on the name Anime Invasion. And it turned out to be some like random Disney animation block name that someone already had totally copyrighted. So we had to switch the name to Anime Insider. Which was a lot less lame anyway. So I think that worked out.
So in those days, because I wanted to bring this up because I don't think people knew that this existed, but back then the magazine had a manga price guide in it, right?
Oh, yes. I thought about that earlier. So this is how, this is how wizard-centric it was, is that Wizard had a price guide, comics have changing prices, although, you know, once eBay came around, that also didn't matter. So there was a manga price guide, which never made a lick of sense from day one, because I mean, there used to be a time, and probably way too many of the listeners have no recollection of this, when manga was released in single issues like American comics.
Yeah.
And those went in back bends, but no one ever bought them or remembered them because, one, they started selling stuff in the volumes, the Tankobon, pretty quickly, especially once Tokyo Pop rolled around and the Japanese found that's all anyone wanted to buy. Two, I mean, why would anyone buy the single issues when you could buy the collection? And there was no price, no fluctuating prices. So everything would be like either the same book price over and over again, or if they were individual issues, they would just be tanked because people were just buying the goddamn volumes anyway.
Right.
So it was like four or five volumes of just worthless, worthless nonsense gibberish. And trying to convince the upstairs people, and when I say like the wizard people, so the company was situated like the people downstairs were the editorial people and design people. All the different magazines worked down there. And they were almost uniformly good guys. They were fans of whatever they were into. They were passionate. Then there was the upper guys who it's very easy to term like the downstairs people as good and the upstairs people as evil.
Right.
But that's 100% accurate. And they weren't always evil, but they were often like just, I don't know, trying to tell them like, okay, Anime Insider does not need a price guide because these prices never change. You're not, these aren't issues that go away. These are just being sold in bookstores all the time, period. And I mean, there would be highlights for when something went up or something went down, and it would just be page after page of nothing changing or things going down and all.
Right. Yeah.
It took months for them to figure out that was not fucking done.
I'll just add in a note here. So we were having some connectivity issues. We brought in Rob on a cell phone. Apologies for the quality, but at least you'll be able to get full sentences this way. So we were talking about the price guide and how stupid it was and how the upstairs, that was kind of the culture. That was kind of what I was going to get to next, was the culture in that office. Now, when you started at Wizard, they were in the Conger's office, right?
Yes. I never only knew the Conger's office, actually. The whatever move happened after I took off in 2006. So that was all Summers having to deal with.
Right.
We actually never had to move.
You didn't?
No. They canned Anime Insider shortly before the move was supposed to happen. And they were at the time also in the process of selling that building, which I'm not sure if they ever did.
Last I heard, they didn't, although admittedly I have not kept strictly up to date on whatever nonsense is going on there. So.
Well, to set the scene so people know, the Wizard offices were located in a town called Congers, New York, which is just far enough away from New York City to be a pain in the ass. Lots of snow, lots of hills, kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like close enough to the city to where if you wanted to visit the city, you could, but it was a half hour drive down the cop infested Palisades Parkway. And it was a huge pain in the ass. So we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It was this big sprawling sort of office complex with a gigantic warehouse in the back because Wizard had a fulfillment service and a whole, you know, just rows and rows of old magazines, and they had that, they would sell toys out of there and all that shit.
Oh my God, the stories we could tell about that warehouse.
Warehouse, yeah. So, and the warehouse was where you would go if you just wanted to be left alone.
If you wanted to find Donato hunting turkeys.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And we were in, at least when I got there, Anime Insider had its own office, but it was like four desks in a room, and then we were next door to Toy Fair, which is also four desks in a room, and then Wizard had the bullpen. It wasn't bad. Like it was okay, but that's kind of what we were dealing with, is kind of living in the middle of nowhere in these crappy little, it's not far enough upstate to call it upstate, but it definitely had the upstate New York feel living out there.
As I found out when I got to New York, basically if anything above the Bronx is upstate New York. The entire rest of the state. And the entire rest of the state hates that. It hates New York City for it, but that's kind of it. It was kind of a culture shock for me coming to Kentucky, but, I mean, at least things were super, I mean, things have seemed super expensive to me coming up there in 2001, but compared to anything south of Congers, it was a nightmare. And the reason it was in Congers in the first place is because that's where the guys who founded Wizard, Garib Sheamus, the owner, and Pat McCallum, the editor-in-chief of Wizard and head honcho for the longest time, yeah, that's where they grew up and lived. So, it didn't end up there completely randomly in the sense like we need some awful place, you know, away from civilization to run our magazines. It's just one of the small little New York burgs that, you know, had the office to do the warehouse and all the magazines.
Right, and conveniently located adjacent to the totally shady toy store that it was a Garib's brother that ran that place. Toy Wiz?
Toy Wiz. They're still around.
Yeah. And magically they would get all those Wizard exclusive toys.
Not all those Wizard toys were that good.
No, you don't
say.
They
would get all sorts of toys. And all I can tell you about that place, well, that's a lot, but what I will tell you about this place at that moment is that I never bought anything because everything at that store was so fucking expensive, even with my employee discount.
Yeah, I remember going in there once, and frankly, like, I know that they're still around because every time I go on Amazon to look at the hilarious high prices for things like, you know, hey, what is someone charging for a sealed copy of Super Mario World? Oh, $800. Who's the seller? Toy Wiz. Fuck. That place was ridiculous. So you're working on Anime Invasion. It's right now it's coming out, what, quarterly, so four times a year.
Yeah.
That lasts till when?
God, I don't know. Maybe the first 10 issues? I don't have mine out because I've got mine in boxes because the scars are still pretty deep. Right. But I know I was on Toy Fair and then just doing Anime Invasion, like, part-time. Although that meant, like, once a month I would have two magazines too. Actually, I should clarify that. So, because Wizard Where the Head Dies, and probably partially my fault because I was the dude who knew a bit about anime, Toy Fair had the responsibility of doing Anime Invasion for the quarterlies. He was just the Toy Fair staff doing it, writing it, assigning it, and that meant like 1 month out of three, we'd have two magazines to do, and it was super stressful. Especially stressful for me because I very quickly started getting really, really into the magazine. I part of it was just being crazy. Part of it was just like I kind of saw I could establish myself pretty quick with this thing, like make my niche, I guess. Although I still love Toy Fair. Anyway, so yeah, we did that, and then when we went bi-monthly, that's when I was made managing editor, and I may have helped out Toy Fair a little bit here and there, but basically it was me and another guy doing the one magazine every 2 months, which is actually a breeze, as it turns out. And eventually we hired you, Zach, which was while it was still bi-monthly, I think, right?
It was bi-monthly at the time, and before that, like, my involvement came in around 2003-ish, maybe a little bit before that, 2003, about. And at the time, were you working, once it went bi-monthly, so twice, bi-monthly, people who don't know, means
every
2 months an issue comes out, which is a really luxurious schedule.
Oh, it was delightful. And looking back now, why did I fight so hard to give myself twice as much work? I don't understand.
I don't know.
Honestly, I know exactly why I did it, because I think, oh, we can make it be a legit magazine. It'll be huge for the magazine. It was certainly good, but I mean, even when we went, you know, monthly, I guess it was 2004 or so, you know, the magazines were, anime fans got all their news from the internet anyways. We had some good exclusives, we had some fun stuff, and they kept us in go, but it did not, going monthly did not like launch us into the stratosphere like I had potentially hoped.
Well, so but when you go bi-monthly, you're in that office with Doug Goldstein and Tom Root?
No, Tom Root was freelance at that point.
Okay.
He had left. I didn't replace Tom Root, but he left like a week after I got there. I'm trying to think how that worked out. I know that when we hired that, the person was Kane Tung.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I had my run into them.
Very nice guy.
Uh-huh.
Very, very sweet guy. He was, yeah. All I can remember about Kane, God bless us all, is that he had a blog entirely by his cat.
Right. It was written in the first person from his cat's perspective.
He has his cat, yeah. And I didn't have a big cat person now, but until a lot of work to for your cat. I don't know. Anyway, so yes, you replaced Kane, and we were bi-monthly for a while, and when we went monthly, Summer, is that when we hired you?
I came in, gosh, it was around, I think, issue 14 or so.
When okay, we were so
still bi-monthly, we hadn't gone monthly yet.
Okay.
And then when we went monthly, then it was just kind of crazy. Because, well, as you've mentioned, trying to get any ideas, new ideas or new themes through the heads of the guys upstairs was a little bit like trying to nail, to hammer a nail into the wall with your forehead. Like it just wasn't going in, and wow. All they knew was comics, and it's kind of all they wanted to know.
Yeah, well, so just so people know, like I don't bring these names up because people don't know who these people are, but I only worked with him very briefly, but people may recognize Doug Goldstein. He went on to do Robot Chicken and still works there. And Tom Root did the same thing. And they were both, they both worked on Anime Insider for a pretty extended period of time.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Tom did.
Even after Tom had left, when Rob departed and I took over, he actually came back to the magazine for a little bit to do Animail.
Right, the letters section.
Help out. Yeah.
Right.
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, so, yeah, those were kind of heady days, I think, back then. So my involvement came because I think I contacted you, or you contacted me, maybe, about doing some freelance. And eventually you were just sending me the entire magazine for fact check and copy edit. So I would get a FedEx package that was the whole magazine, back to front. And I would basically be fact checking it and doing a copy edit pass. And then mailing it back to you. Or I think I would email the corrections in. I think that's how that would go.
Very possible to you. And I think at some point, Doug and I recognized that perhaps we should just have you in the office to do that. That was probably a better use of everybody's time.
Well, and what happened was, it was sort of a weird time for me because I was fresh out of college. And I was being courted by you guys and by In America. And the first, it was a tough weekend where I actually drove to San Francisco to interview at An America, and bless their hearts, Viz had nice offices, but they wanted to offer me something like $23,000 a year, and I had to live.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. And I had to live in San Francisco. So in other words, I would be homeless.
I'm sorry.
No, it's hilarious. And you know, after I told them, like, well, you know, Wizard's interested. I've got this other offer. They bumped that up to like 26, which is like, gee, thanks, guys. Like, oh, now I'm gonna be okay.
Yeah, that was the day. Oh my god.
Yeah,
you would have a tough time. Yeah, in,
wouldn't work.
You know, Conger is at 23.
Yeah,
and Congress isn't quite as nice as San Francisco, if I recall.
No,
the thing about An America is that like, so Anime Insider was kind of the redheaded stepchild, because they just did not understand anime or anime fans or whatever. So we would have meetings sometimes, and either, like, they just wouldn't understand, so we would have to, they would either, like, do whatever we wanted because they had no idea what was going on, or they would never do anything because they didn't know what was going on. In America, I think, was in at the time, was just the small little part that no one kind of cared about other than the workers there. So they had very little resources from Viz. And that was before Viz had the big Shueisha deal, giving them all the Naruto's and Bleach's and monies of the anime industry.
Right. Yeah. And so once I got that offer, I basically called, I think it was Doug, and said, I'm ready to come out there. And y'all flew me out, and it was good, and we got along, and it seemed like a good idea. And then I packed my shit into a U-Haul and drove from Phoenix, Arizona to slightly upstate New York to work there. And it turned into two of the simultaneously, like, most miserable, and yet, you know, we had some really happy times. But I was kind of miserable in New York. Like, I hated the weather so much, it depressed me. Like, I couldn't handle the snow. I just couldn't handle it. Hence why I fucking got out of there as fast as I could the minute I had a job offer that would let me live in California. But we had good times. Like, I have very fond memories of those days. Don't get me wrong. Like, we had some really good times. Most of them involving copious amounts of alcohol, but we had some good times back then. And at the time, it was bi-monthly. And I don't think I replaced Kane Tung. I think I replaced Trisha Sebastian.
Oh, God. I actually totally blocked out Trisha Sebastian. So well, that is my bad.
I'm sure she's doing fine. I wanted to just briefly let people know what it was like working on a print publication back then, because it's unheard of now to have a staff like this. So every issue of that magazine, we would all be in the same room, gasp. There would be four people who would do a copy edit pass. Four sets of eyes on these pages. Never happens now. Like, that is unheard of, to have an editorial department that even looks for typos. Like, it's all on the one guy writing it.
Yeah.
And so we would pass around these pages. It was all kind of primitive. Like, we would have to go to the design area and tell them where we wanted the images placed. And, you know, we actually had a really nice, really competent design team there. Those guys were pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, they were great. Absolutely great. They burned through them like flies, man, but they were uniformly cool and nice. So.
Yeah. And they made our jobs a lot easier most of the time.
You know, what we would have to do is, I mean, Anime Insider was really tough for them, I think, because our images were so specific, not just like, but for a lot of reasons. So, I mean, they just growing up in America, you know, they're aware of whatever comic characters are happening. So Captain America, you know, it doesn't require a lot of thought. We're somehow, you know, we're giving them articles with names like put Satoshi Baba's, you know, picture here. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
So we had to have, like, pages and pages of detailed instructions, make sure everything was, files were named right, how to do stuff. And then we had all those crazy orders from the Japanese publishers of what we should do, what's not, and everything like that.
Yeah, we'll get into that, yeah.
This image, you can't show this person without this person. And then we would have to send everything, well, with particular articles, we would have to send everything back to the studio in Japan so that they could look over it, approve it, and then...
Oh, they were awful.
But it was terrible, especially, I mean, you might think that a monthly deadline is quite leisurely, but when it involves, you know, toughing it out with the in-house design and then, you know, going two, three, maybe four rounds with the Japanese studio for approval, it gets tight.
Well, yeah, and we had like 5-6 features per thing. And then we'd have, I mean, 100 pages to fill with, you know, news on all the stuff, brainstorming articles, writing articles, editing articles, assigning articles, getting freelancers to turn their fucking articles back in.
Yeah, that was fun.
Rewriting articles. I mean, just, and then to add the Japanese component on top of that, I mean, was the ones when it was completely insane and they would need to go back and forth. Yeah, those were always nightmares. But they had us over a barrel because we needed their content a lot more than they needed us.
Yeah.
So we had to play by their horrible rules. But so it was kind of traumatic, no question about it.
Oh God, I remember times that I would be on the phone with Japan, you know, at home on a weekend, you know, at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night with the studio going, okay, we need to change what? We can't show the tip of the gun but you gave us that image. Why can't we show it now?
Yeah, that was, unquestionably one of the worst parts of that job was having to get approval on anything from Japan. It was the worst. Yeah. And they were obsessed with the copyright lines. I still remember, like, oh, is it a filled in black dot in between the production committee and this animation studio, or is it an outline of a white dot? Like, fuck this, fuck you. Like, it was the worst, and they would freak out if we got it wrong. So, like, you know, there were repercussions if we got any of that shit wrong. And you know, they would, like Summer was saying, like, super specific, like, you always have to show Naruto's whole head. You can't ever cut any piece of his head off. You have to see the whole face and the hair. And if you do anything other than that, we're going to not give you approval and we'll never work with you again. So, and we relied on them for everything.
Yeah, well, and to be fair, this was absolutely the worst about the, about approvals and rules and copyrights and stuff, which was especially awful because they had all the Shonen Jump stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which was our bread and butter,
Yes, yes. Bandai, I feel like they weren't hardcore, but occasionally, like, I would go to Japan a couple times a year, and I could use that to go get some features, stuff like that. So I met with Bandai at Sunrise and got some good, like, Gundam Seed art, and then if we got something like super like exclusive, they would want to see that. They usually wouldn't be too like hardcore about it. They would just like, we need to see this before you go with it. Also obnoxious, but not nearly as bad. Pioneer Genion, they were just so messed up that and I probably said this on the last podcast because it's my favorite story of how just insane the anime industry to be. Read or Die, the TV, was coming out. Read or Die was a very, very popular title. And the TV show, while the first, like, I don't know, 12 episodes are incredibly boring as shit, Read or Die is still popular, whatever. So I was looking through Read or Die, the TV art for the cover, and they had nothing good. Like, all the art that you saw in, like, Not just D-Type, but all the other Japanese magazines, the 18 million Japanese anime magazines that actually, you know, put out good art on a monthly basis. Pioneer Genion couldn't get any of that somehow. They just somehow could not get art to their own shows. So we had this terrible picture that I think they ended up using as a pencil board of the totally nondescript pink-haired girl. And I'm still like, okay, it's Read or Die the TV. It will let me put Read or Die the TV on the cover. Let's just do it. And I think, you know, Jimmy will be so thrilled. I mean, just that we've got the cover, it'd be great. So I say, we'd like this image for the cover. And I get a call back like the next day from their PR dude sounding depressed at the call because he had to tell me Japan does not want this image on a cover. We don't want the cover. We don't want to. It was just so counter to everything ever.
Yeah.
I'm still boggled.
It's a gigantic frustrating mess. But so this is when I came in, it was like real early 2004. So I think I moved there like January or February 2004, and it wasn't long before we wound up. I know, Summer, I was almost immediately bringing you in to do freelance.
Yeah, I think I started off doing some freelance on like Sayuki.
I just found that article. I just flipped past it. It was in the same issue as an article I apparently wrote about the top five fan service anime for guys and gals.
which don't feel is, bad. I've been looking through these issues here, and there's a lot of features that I'll come past and think to myself, I wrote that.
Yeah. Well, and it was one issue I was flipping past. It's like 10 reasons you absolutely have to watch DigiCarrot, and like Rob wrote it. And it's like what? Like
I actually like DigiCarrot.
This wasn't the good one. This wasn't the good one. This was the shitty one. but the one thing I did want to bring up before we chronologically move forward was that one of the hardest parts of working on this magazine. For me especially, because I came from Anime News Network, which is purely opinion. I work in pure opinion. Like, it is all opinion for me. And sometimes it's really harsh opinion. Sometimes, you know, it's passionate opinion. But I was able to adapt to the Anime Insider voice. But Anime Insider had an extremely specific voice, and freelancers had to match the voice. And finding freelancers who could do it competently and regularly and on time was incredibly tough. But the tone of the magazine is super rah-rah, buy everything, everything's great. And I think the excuse we had was like, well, we just don't write about the things we don't like.
Which is not true at all.
Which wasn't true. Yeah, that was not true. But that's how he justified it.
That would have been
great. But Wizard just didn't trade in, if you can believe it, like a entertainment journalism that doesn't trade in opinion. It's almost unheard of now. But that was the Wizard policy. There was no opinion. There were never reviews in any of these magazines.
Right.
It's plot synopsis and literally a buyer's guide. Like half of these articles that I'm revisiting, the tone is, here's why you absolutely have to see this thing. Like we're selling this stuff. I enjoyed working on it and I'm glad I had the experience, but looking back on it, the editorial policy turned us into shills. Like for a large chunk of the time, I felt a little dirty sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How did you feel about that whole thing, Rob?
Well, I didn't mind the lack of reviews, in all honesty, because I always, I don't know, as you know, as a blogger, it's just my name on it. It's out there. You know, I have no problem with that. But for the gestalt of the magazine, I mean, especially looking back at the reviews of Anime America New Type, they were terrible. They were god-awful terrible. And I'm sure we would have done a better job with it, but I never looked at any of those reviews and thought, oh, this has given me some new insight, or this has convinced me to do anything. I understand, you know, feeling like, oh, we shilled stuff. And I mean, that's true to a large extent. We wanted to make things sound exciting for people, whatever. I don't know. It was very much what that nag was. We were selling, you know, promoting the stuff and, you know, trying to help the anime companies and help the anime companies help us. And it wasn't all that. We obviously tried to, you know, I think it was just playing the game. We would try to, like, give, you know, every company kind of a reason to be invested in the issue, to, you know, want to keep working with us, help, you know, they had a big thing, we were going to try and help them. And that allowed us to do other articles and interviews and other fun stuff.
Right. Yeah, it gave us access.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it didn't, I mean, yeah, we weren't going to, we were not investigative journalism.
No, of course not. But, I guess my take on it, looking back on it, reading this magazine now, like looking back through it now, it's like, holy shit, you're just literally not allowed to ever be negative about anything. And it feels chilly, but at the time, I remember, like, the whole thing was, look, our audience are teenagers and maybe a little older and a little younger who are super excited about anime and watch a lot of Cartoon Network. and we're writing a magazine for those people who are really excited about anime, and they don't want, like, you know, a lot of editorializing or any negativity or anything like that, which is, it's kind of a weird thing that I ever worked on this magazine in the first place, but
yeah,
you too, Rob, but like, it's, looking back on it, it's easy to be cynical about it, but I remember in the moment, like, that was, that, it wasn't a justification, that's legit, like, we were selling a magazine to people who were excited about anime and trying to get them excited about anime, and that was kind of it, like, you know, yeah, we never, like, to pay
very,
or anything.
Very
like,
specific.
Yeah.
There were always ways around it, too, if you were, you know, if you were willing to go the extra mile. Say that there was something that as frequently happened, you know, the sales staff would inform us that, you know, a certain number of ads had been sold to such and such a company, and it would be a great idea if we would cover such and such a property. You know, we're not going to, like, cut our own throats. We would definitely cover it, but the way we covered it, the manner in which we accomplished that, was entirely up to us. So... I remember we did some articles that were just outrageously terrible, I think. I'm not remembering any of them off the top of my head, but, you know.
Probably blocked them out. No, that's true. I mean...
Yes, I've blocked out a lot of stuff from the later years. But you can lampoon something very cleverly and not have the person realize that you are poking fun at.
Especially not have Japan realize, because they were worried about their copyrights and making sure there wasn't a single letter over a millimeter of Naruto's hair. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Their concerns were different. But so, okay, so a couple, I would say 2005, 2004. When did you move to New York, Summer?
I think that was in 2004, sometime in the summer. I moved out to come on as one of the associate or assistant editors. And that was very interesting, coming straight from the desert into a lush green area. But I was super excited at first. And then as the years went on, I became less excited about certain things and more intent on accomplishing other things. Also, thanks to the groundwork that Rob laid, by the time I took over the magazine, the upstairs staff had realized that they didn't really know much about anime, so they were just going to let Anime Insider go. And as long as nothing bad was happening with advertising sales, they really didn't check in on us as much. So I started testing the boundaries of what they would let me get away with. So that, I think, became my focus in the later years of the magazine.
Right. So we'll get to that. But so in this interim period, this is when the magazine was transitioning from coming out six times a year to coming out 12 times a year, going from monthly to bi-monthly. And this was a kind of a – I remember it being a painful process. Like the redesign, because we were having a whole magazine redesigned. And also going monthly. And in the interim, I want to talk about this just because I want to tell these stories. So we didn't only have to work on Anime Insider. Everyone wore a lot of hats at Wizard, and if you worked on one publication, odds are you're going to be asked to do shit for other publications. So, like, I got stuck writing a bunch of anime articles for the Wizard audience, which was fucking impossible because...
No one at Wizard knew or cared anything about anime, and the assumption was that their readers wouldn't either. Yeah. So
when they had to cover something, generally they would come to us and say, "One of you guys needs to write this," and it was miserable. And then I wanted to bring up the special hell of a magazine that. For a brief period, I think paid our Christmas bonuses called Toy Wishes.
Oh, yeah. We paid a lot.
Oh, okay. We're going to go here.
So I just want to bring this up because I have this incredibly vivid memory of Toy Wishes. So Toy Wishes was this god-awful... I mean, you want to talk about shill. Like, Toy Wishes was literally a quote-unquote parents buying guide for toys that would come out right before Christmas, and they had this big press event. So, like, I think they still do this, but it has nothing to do with Garib Sheamus or Fred or any of those people, where they're like, here's the 12 hottest toys for Christmas time, and number one toy is going to be the one that's hard to get, so it's fucking Elmo or whatever at number one. This magazine was kind of where that came from. Most of it is just a product catalog. And it was huge, and the process for working on this miserable piece of shit was someone would bring in these huge boxes of manila envelopes with zip drives in them, or zip discs, if people remember what zip discs are. And we had to sit there and sort through these giant boxes of zip discs, and everything had to be very carefully formatted, and it's hundreds of products, and you're literally writing, like, fun in the sun, it's splash time with Elmo. Like, that is what you're writing. And you want to put a gun to your mouth. It is the worst. Like, that was the worst experience. But they would also have this big show, like this big showcase thing in New York City. And I remember, Summer, you and I spent an entire afternoon with wire clippers opening countless toys.
Oh, I had successfully forgotten about that until this very moment.
And by the end...
Oh, the cuts on my fingers. Yeah.
So literally, we're literally opening Bratz dolls for 6 hours and like setting them up, and it's all like everything's riding on this for the management. So they're super on our ass the entire time, and your hands are all cut up because they put those things in there like it's precious cargo.
You're not going to get those toys out of it. You know, I heard a good trick last week. Use a can opener to open some of those packages. Wish we'd had one of those.
Right, but that was a special hell, and we had to work on it because it was, like, the most profitable magazine for the company. And there was at least 1 year where I know we got a Christmas bonus as a result of Toy Wishes, and then it never happened again. So, but we had to work on it.
The good times. You'll know that I did not go to that thing.
I know, I remember. I remember being pissed, like, where's Rob? Why isn't he doing this?
I was very important. I had very big anime business to take care of, being the editor. Very, very necessary.
So there was Toy Wishes, and then briefly I'll mention we generally had to attend Wizard had, I don't know if they still have them, I can't remember. I think they
do. That's the only thing they do now.
Is just, okay, so they had Wizard World, which was a series of conventions with, you know, the same 50 people show up as guests. You get your Stan Lees and your Kevin Smiths, and then there's that row in the back of depressing TV celebrities that...
Lou Ferrigno, Virgil, the million-dollar man's butler from 80s professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Other assorted stars.
Although in his defense, Lou Ferrigno is really nice.
I'm sure.
I can't say the same thing about a lot of the other celebrities that we had at the conventions, and they were always pushing for, like, we want more anime fans here, make that happen, but they wouldn't spring for any, you know, extra resources to bring in the anime fans.
Those conventions, when we had to work them while you're stuck on the show floor, because we had, oh god, so we wouldn't only do Wizard World, we would also do anime conventions, but we would have to be stuck behind a table for 8 hours a day trying desperately to sell subscriptions. So we were stuck. You know, the more I think about this...
Is this your way of torturing us? Have we wronged you in the past?
No, I thought it would be fun to tell the stories, but like, so we were stuck behind these tables. Generally, yeah, we would start drinking real early. Or at least Rob and I would start drinking pretty early in the day during these conventions. And we would try and sell subscriptions. And there was an expectation. We had to basically make the trip profitable in order for them to send us to the convention so we could cover the convention.
I don't know that it was quite that mercantile. We said we had to go. The only way they would... I mean, the only thing they understood was getting a booth, whatever. And honestly, I was pleased with getting a booth because we would at least get some eyes and some recognition that way. I mean, there's nothing else to do other than sell subscriptions, really. We can just sit there and answer questions, you know, whatever. But yeah, we would just do that and shift. And the anime conventions were better than the Wizard World conventions, because then you've got actual anime fans there who are interested. Wizard World conventions were much, much less so. Those were the ones we had to drink harder. And, of course, the one where I will never forget is that not the Wizard World, not Anime Expo or Otakon or whatever, was that Vegas convention that was a total debacle.
Oh, I wasn't there for that.
No one attended.
No, that
I thought you were there.
No, I wasn't in Vegas.
Oh, man. There were actually literally like more shopkeepers on the floor than there were attendees. It was just nothing. Wait. Was it Wizard World LA where we just said fuck it?
Yes. It was called Wizard World LA, but it was in Long Beach. And we were so
with New Yorkers.
We were so goddamn miserable because we had to do all their anime programming. And I remember you and I managed to put together an entire masquerade in like an hour because there was no planning. No one thought of anything. It was just like, hey, you guys are going to do a costume contest, masquerade. You guys are going to do it. And they told us that like the day before or something like that. Or like we had to put the whole fucking thing together in no time at all and work the stupid booth where no one cared. There was a day where I left the hotel room at something like 10 o'clock in the morning, hailed a cab, told him, take me to the nearest liquor store, bought a bottle of scotch and 2 liter bottles of ginger ale, and just made liter sized highballs and brought them to the table, and we just said, fuck it.
Yeah.
Those were the days. And that was the day we put that whole masquerade together, so it's not like it impaired us too much, but
no.
It was ridiculous. We were so miserable.
The Wizard ones were terrible. I have fond memories of the anime ones. But in Wizard World Chicago is big because that was like the San Diego East Coast one. But like the other ones, Philadelphia, and someone was there one time when we just brought the GameCube to play Mario Kart and drank for a significant portion.
Yeah, I do remember that one. That was a good time. I think that was when I started perfecting my horror drawings, which I would put on the cover of magazines sometimes that we were giving out. You know, just to pass the time. You guys had the liquor and the video games. I had scribbles of obscure anime mascots. Time.
Yeah, we all figured out ways to pass the time. But the one that broke me the most was the one where I literally was thinking about just quitting, was that Akon in Dallas that you and I went to, Rob, and it was the pits. Like, it just, you felt dirty. And I remember there was a very specific moment where we were at our table trying to sell magazines, and we sold a fair amount of magazines, but this was at the height of the free hugs signs, which I don't really see a lot of those anymore.
Thank God.
Like, that culture's gone. But there was a girl who could not have been older than 13 who came up to the table with her shirt, like, rolled up over her stomach, and she had written kisses 25 cents in lipstick on her gut. And asked us for our autograph. And I said, you know, I'm gonna go jump off a bridge into traffic. Like, this is the worst. The worst.
Akon was filthy. It was so sleazy, and I don't know why. It was just like the whole con was like a porn set somehow.
Yeah, it was.
Everybody was undocumented, and no one had used protection, and most of them were underage, and it was just bad.
Yeah, it's a bad scene.
Yeah, that was really, really soul crushing.
Yeah, so that was like, I remember that as like, here's the crystallizing moment. Like, wait, can I do this? Can I get through this? You know, the after hours were generally pretty fun, even though I don't remember most of them. But yeah, so we had to do conventions, we had to do Toy Wishes, and we occasionally had to do, in the earliest part of this, we had to do special issues, because the big thing was a now-failed card game called Duel Masters.
Well, we did Yu-Gi-Oh! Beforehand. That's right. The one that people would actually know. We would do a special for Yu-Gi-Oh! Here and there. And then someone, I'm pretty sure, paid the company a lot of money to do dual masters. So, I mean, we were trying to promote anime in general, but this was just like, this was like pure, like, pay for play. You give us a bunch of money, we will make a magazine about your thing.
Right.
And yeah, and dual masters did not go. I never really still understand it. I don't get, there was something about it that was just weird. I don't think, is it from Korea? Is it actually Japanese? Is it?
It is. I think it was. I don't remember a whole lot about dual masters, obviously, but it was a Japanese property that they really, really, really wanted to push here. They wanted it to be the next Yu-Gi-Oh, and it wasn't. And I remember we hated it. We hated working on all that stuff so much because as much as each of us had our own individual, like, here, I'm really into this, I'm really into that, none of us cared about the card game stuff. Like, not so.
And the funny thing is that although there was a magazine about the card games at Wizard Inquest, they also didn't care about the anime card games for shit. Which meant, like, sometimes we would need to ask them things that they didn't know or care about, that they would need to ask us things that we didn't know or care about, and it was, you know, things were always a little awkward between anime and Cyber Inquest, although everybody was kind of awkward with Inquest because they were the card guys and nice guys, but
they never see, there was a lot of, like, okay, so that office had a lot of camaraderie in it, like, people got along really well. You know, it was a little high schoolish at times, but the Inquest guys were definitely the nerdiest dudes in the room. Like, in a room full of nerds, the Inquest guys were the nerdiest guys.
Yeah.
And henceforth were treated as such. Like, they were nice guys, but we didn't socialize with them hardly at all.
They never socialized with anybody. I mean, yeah. Wizard and Toy Fair got along great. Toy Fair and Anime Insider got along great. Anime Insider, Wizard, a little less so. And then Inquest just would be by themselves all day, every day, doing whatever. So yeah.
Right, and that may have had something to do with their location in the office, which was crammed into like a back corner. So moving on. So in 2005, we went monthly. I'm pretty sure that it would be. Yeah.
Was it before that? Because I left in 2006. Did I only stay for a year for monthly? That may be true. Wait. A year plus. So I think 36 was my last monthly issue. So yeah, that sounds right. Never mind. Continue on.
So in 2005, around the summertime, Anime Insider comes, or not Anime Insider, Anime News Network comes knocking on my door and says, hey, you can be, you know, you want to take over all of our editorial. And I struggled with this a lot. Like, that was actually a really tough decision for me to make. And I'm pretty sure I made Rob totally miserable for an entire summer as a result.
Yes. Well, I'll talk about that more in a second. So continue.
Oh, okay. And at the time, like, the idea was I would be coming in to work on Protoculture Addicts. but mostly I wanted to run Anime News Network's editorial. It was a good job, and at that point, the writing wasn't yet on the wall about print, but I started having, like, serious discussions with myself and looking at the health of the print industry and wondering how long this was going to last. I was miserable out in New York and didn't want to live there anymore. I couldn't handle the weather. I loved working with you guys and everything, but I had to go. Like, I had to get the fuck out of there. And I was, you know, there was a girl, of course, and because that's me and my stupid life. So I quit. I think I left, like, late summer, August 2005, I think, is when I left Anime Insider for California. And at the time, I was like, I think maybe I made a mistake, because I didn't want to piss anybody off. I didn't want to hurt Rob, I didn't want to hurt you or anybody working there. I loved, you know, the time that I had spent there for the most part. But I had to go. Afterward, like, in hindsight, because a year later, you left.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, it was the right choice to make, because I eventually basically future-proofed myself. So that was that summer for me. It was tumultuous, but I don't regret it, but it was a really hard decision to make, and I always felt a little bad about it.
Well, you totally wrecked me. But as it turns out, I was genuinely crazy. I took Anime Insider way too seriously. I took it all way too seriously. I was stressed out about the magazine, and some are going to test you because I was stressed out while you were there. But
yeah,
got worse and worse after
once you left. He descended. His descent into madness, you know, just really accelerated, and it was God. There's some days. What is it? Some days you would play. What is that? Australian pop singer that you're so obsessed with at the
time. Kylie Minogue.
You would play Kylie Minogue the whole day.
Oh, God.
That's when I knew it was bad.
I just want to briefly mention this. The other day, I had revisited Final Fantasy X-2, and the minute that fucking song started, I swear to God, I had, like, PTSD flashbacks to sitting in that office and hearing that fucking song come out of your iMac all day.
I can't imagine how much music I ruined for you guys over and over again. But my point is, I couldn't sleep at night because I was thinking about the magazine and was so anxious about whatever was going on. With it all on defeat, it was still no matter what was going on in Anime Magazine. I really should have been a little more chill. I got into like a severe depression by the end of it, and I left because I was so depressed. And it turns out, I didn't notice at the time, I was actually clinically depressed, which is why I was so insane and made many of you guys miserable. I think mostly come here and probably Kara Reynolds. I don't know if Wizard like broke me emotionally, but after I left and got medical attention, I realized, oh, that was bad.
I honestly like your battles with the upstairs, like the management, were so, I mean, literally, I think it came down to it where there was a period there where I had checked out. Like, I was like, well, I'm only going to be here for another month. Better not do anything. Like, I stopped giving a fuck because I was leaving. But that was during the period, I think, where it was pretty dark times. And there would be, like, once or twice, three times, four times a week, where we would all just smack our foreheads at the choices being made by upstairs and our fights with the advertising department, which never seemed to give us our due or be able to get any ads for us. Like, they were bad at selling ads for us.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just...
Well, their commission was for Wizard, and they whatever the commission was for Anime was less. So they would almost... So many of them would never even try unless was taken into their lap. And we would, like, give them hints and think like, oh, these companies have X and Y coming out. They're going to want to advertise. And they just would never do anything. And without the advertising dollars, we couldn't get bigger budgets, hire more people, get better exclusives, things like that. It was awful.
It came to the point at one point where I was actually on a monthly basis sending the advertising staff a list of like, hey, here's our next issue that's going to come out, you know, way down the road. It's got this, that's by this company. Here's their number. It's got this, that's by this company. Here's the contact there. Like, I was sending them like a step-by-step guide on how to get ads for the magazine because we had, Rob remembers this, we had this variable grid of like how many ads we got determined how long the magazine would be.
Yep.
So say we got, you know, X number of ads, then that meant that it was only going to be, you know, like a 62-page magazine, you know, sliding scale. Obviously, we want, you know, we didn't want to have to cut content because we always planned on the largest that we could. But they just did not give a crap about learning how to sell anime ads.
And that was so crushing because we cared a lot. And the fate of the magazine was in these people's hands who could not have given less of a shit. And everything we did didn't make the least bit of difference. So, I mean, that was a lot of where my misery came, where, like, if you know, some people upstairs gave, like, a tenth of the shit I gave, we would be doing great, or at least so much better. That was a lot of agony.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, to wit, what I think that kind of speaks to a positive, which is that, you know, okay, like at the time, during those years, we weren't cynical about what it was we were doing. Like, we all did believe in the magazine. We all thought it was good. We all thought we were making quality product. And looking back on it, like, it's not a bad magazine. It's fine.
I don't think so. You know, I stand by it. I mean, versus, you know, it's the magazine I wanted over Pan American New Type, that's for sure. I wish we had a lot of New Type's resources, but I thought our articles were better. And
it was, I think Anime Insider was just more fun. And we, it was a lot, like the magazine,
yeah, we
could
take
if anything,
seriously.
You say
everyone else was so deadly, like, you know, anime is serious business. And at least we understood, like, come on, guys, these are cartoons. And there were people who understood that.
Right.
You know, there were a lot of kids who were, like, just totally as insane about anime as I was about the magazine. And they hated how we could possibly impugn the dignity of Naruto once in a while. But,
well, there's another place where our opinions could come out. We slapped word balloons all over everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, and frankly, some of them are still pretty damn funny. Like, some of these are really good jokes. Like, looking through it, solid. I'll give it still a thumbs up. Like, that's a pretty good, one. Like, I kind of wish I remembered who wrote some of these, because some pretty good singers.
We should have kept it a bank so we could prove who was the funniest.
I can mark them up.
Yeah, but it, you know, we had a lot of fun with it. And that's where that comes from. Like, you know, we can sit here and go like, wizard, but we believed in what we were doing sincerely, and it wasn't cynical, and that's why it was so crushing, I think, when all those awful decisions from management and dealing with the advertising department and all that shit just kind of, like, it weighed it down. It made it not fun. It made it not fun to make this thing that we were trying to make that was supposed to be fun. So I think ultimately, like, that's kind of where that comes from. So I'm out of there, late 2005. I'm off to the best coast, and and that's when that's where my knowledge of this, because I know I was still doing a little bit of freelance for you after the fact, but that went away pretty quick, and so I assume summer took over for me, and that's when you guys brought Todd Siolik in, who still works for me at Anime News Network, and then we
take Kara Reynolds shortly after that. I don't think Todd was just Summer and Todd before Kara showed up to you.
Kara came in before I left.
You two overlapped very briefly.
Yeah, it was like a month or something.
Okay, so that's right. We finally had the money for another staff member, and we hired Kara because she was new to the scene, and I thought it was a great idea. She was young and bright and super go-getter. I probably terrorized her more than anybody because I think it was one of her earlier jobs. But I wanted, you know, I think it was between her and Todd, actually. We ended up going with Kara because, you know, we just liked that idea of a very fresh set of eyes to keep us from getting too hardcore.
And
then you left and we needed a hardcore guy and we got Todd.
Well, similarly, I do remember, actually, yeah, I was there for this. The idea with Kara specifically was we knew that our readership was largely female. Like, Anime Insider always had a really big female readership, and we wanted that voice in the magazine. We wanted that perspective. Summer was there already, of course. But having a staff that's half male, half female would more accurately represent the demographic of the magazine and therefore hopefully be better, like, as a result, serve the readership better.
Mm-hmm. I think. And that was another thing that people upstairs didn't understand, because they knew Wizard all guys, it's, you know, they could never figure out anything to do with that, despite the fact, you know, and I'm sure it must have been weird for Summer and Kara to be in what was more or less a sausage factory, and to be two of the very few females in there.
The guys wouldn't even let us have our own bathroom. Like, we had to go to the bathroom in the back of the warehouse, because there were so many men in the building. There were only a couple of us. And, like, used to drive me crazy because we would even get guy overflow into that bathroom. And you'd go into it sometimes and there'd be, like, the seats up, there's piss everywhere. for God's sake, I just have one thing here.
God, Jesus. I really didn't think I was going to remember the bathrooms at Wizards.
No,
forget.
I could,
there's so many shenanigans
I could tell you
on in them. The bathroom shenanigans at Wizard were kind of infamous.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, we tell you stories. The fact is, there was a dude that we would label, that we called the Phantom Shitter. And that was not even in the top three most terrifying, disgusting things that happened in those bathrooms. And the Phantom Shitter struck a lot. A lot.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, so I'm out, Kara comes in, and I guess then what? Because that's where my knowledge of what happened, what went down at Anime Insider stops. I don't know what happened after that. So I guess this is on you guys.
Well, I was there for a year, and I know. I got increasingly crazier and more depressed, and made people miserable, especially myself. And I thought the magazines were good, but, oh, my God, I was out of my mind. And eventually, because of – we had to let Kara go, and that was mostly because they couldn't be bothered to sell ads for our magazine. And that was so awful and maddening and just horrible for her. I mean, that was the final straw for me. That is when I just started looking for work because I couldn't handle it anymore. So eventually I hooked up with Funimation for the Anime Online debacle. But I don't remember, like,
nice
any...
Nice try, Bricken.
Yeah. I remember, I mean, that year, I think we put out some really good content and had some really good stuff, but all I remember is, like, being harried and anxious and super stressed and probably making the summer Kara and Todd miserable until I left.
Well, I'm sure there was plenty of that going on, but there was always plenty of that going on, you know? Yeah. That is the way it was, and we love you like that, miserable and slightly drunk and sometimes underneath your desk.
Jesus.
Playing Kylie Minogue over and over and over.
Over and over again. Also, I find it difficult to listen to The Pillows.
Oh, yeah.
And Nico Case. Those are the bands that you ruined for me.
Yeah, all right. I can see that. Because really, those were Pillows and Nico Case were my go-to.
Yep.
Yeah, we know.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I don't really know why I didn't put on headphones.
There was a thing about that, because I remember that.
What a dick thing to do. What a horrible dick thing to do.
No, there was a thing, like Andrew Carden, who was our executive editor... I think that was his title, right?
Yeah, I believe it was.
He didn't want us wearing headphones because he wanted to be able to get our attention. That was a rule. I remember that. That was a rule because
really?
Okay, the other song that is burned into my brain, and every time I hear it, I like flash back to that office. Is that fucking Darkness song that you played?
Over and over again.
And I would like give you like I would tell you like if you play that one more time. I'm going to
come from
cut
the Coyfer office. I don't know that I played it.
It was
much.
You.
I remember Coyfer played it a ton.
That was you.
I blame you. All right. All about it.
But I remember asking, like, can we wear headphones? And it was a thing. Like, we weren't supposed to be wearing headphones because if someone needed to get our attention, it was too much of a distraction.
Tap you on the shoulder or something like that.
I guess. Whatever.
Or I am you. Turn around and talk to me.
I was convinced it was like a conspiracy to continue torturing us with Rob music.
With my eclectic, often terrible musical taste.
With your 6-song playlist for 8 hours a day. But anyway, so... Okay, so you decide you've had it. You're done with Anime Insider. Or you're done with Wizard, rather, and you leave for greener pastures. And then summer, that's...
I left for a different pasture, I suppose.
Well, okay, yeah. Well, you know, let's not get into, like, peak.
Indeed. I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew that it was miserable, and I was also bitter there. So,
well, the story, like those stories, like you effectively kind of got dicked over by both Funimation and ADV in the aftermath of Anime Insider.
Indeed.
But you found
it. Go ahead. But no, Anime Insider, I love the magazine. I love the people I worked directly with, but Wizard as a company was awful.
Yeah, and I also wanted to bring this up because it's just kind of a weird, fucking weird-ass anecdote. So Wizard published a lot of different magazines. One of them was kept like this bizarre open secret where you weren't really supposed to talk about it, but one of the executives had published this bizarro paramilitary magazine that was for like survivalist enthusiasts and like gun nuts.
Soldier
of Fortune magazine, I think.
Wasn't it called like Special Ops or something like that?
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
And I remember being so freaked out that was happening. I'm like, what? Who runs this company? Like, why are we publishing this? Like, it's so weird. And like, it was kind of storied because issues did not circulate. And I wasn't even told about it until like way later on. And I was basically said like, okay, we also published this, but don't say anything about it. Like, everyone treated it like it was kind of this awful thing. And it sort of was like this weird, dark secret. Like,
it was weird and freaky. That's
yeah, it was just scary, right?
See, and I mean, they would never. You couldn't. I mean, they wouldn't take the Wizard. We put no names of the Wizard's employees on it. I don't even know who worked on it. I think it was like some guy probably in a cabin and like a modem connection, right. You know, something there. He wrote the entire thing. Probably on like a typewritten manifesto that someone else had to put into Microsoft Word.
He's got to drive into town and fax it in.
Exactly, yeah. He brought it down to the office max with, you know, in disguise just in case the, you know, government spy satellites found him. So it was just weird. One of the many weird things that happened there, but certainly that was definitely bizarre.
Yeah, it was fucking strange. So you check out, you're done, and then Summer, you take over.
Yes, and I was so excited at the time because, you know, I think part of Rob's growing madness had been that he had been kind of a complete buffer for us. I mean, we knew based on his conversations within the office the kind of bullshit that he had to deal with on a daily basis. But he was very good at kind of shielding the staff from it.
Yeah.
So I when I took over, I really had no idea how much pure, unmitigated bullshit I was going to have to deal with. And it was quite a bit. It dampened my enthusiasm rather quickly. You know, just for working on the magazine, not, you know, for what I was writing about. I always loved that. And the kind of crazy multi hat wearing stuff that they had us do, you know, it was horrifying, but in the end it was like some sort of terrible crucible where you come out the other end and you're like, now I can write in any voice that you want me to.
Right. Yeah. It is a skill. That is definitely a skill.
Basically what they did to us was churn out the session musicians of the writing world. You know, we can just go in and we can write something the way that it needs to be written, and then we leave. You know, we're not ever going to be on the New York Times bestseller list, but we will have steady work our entire lives. But so that sounded kind of cynical in retrospect after I listened to myself say that, but that's kind of what Wizard did.
No, look, that's like one of the most valuable skills you can have as a writer is being able to adapt your voice to whatever the publication you're writing for requires.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge skill. And, you know, I've gotten, now that I manage editorial, I just let myself go. Like, it's like, hey, whatever. Like, I like my skills on that front are probably pretty rusty. But I know you've successfully and stably, continually made a living off of those skills. And
I am a professional writer.
Right.
But, you know, when I took over, we were monthly, and we had gotten, you know, Rob had gotten us to a decent level of, you know, quote unquote fame, if fame can be had in the world of U.S. based anime.
Print magazine.
But so, you know, it was a fun time. You know, we got to, at that point, Upstairs had kind of let us go, you know, as long as we were selling issues, they weren't going to really do anything. So we got to do a lot of fun stuff. I tried to keep it as entertaining for the staff as I could, and not do the same thing that Rob had done for us, which is shield them from the unrelenting rain of feces coming out of the mouths of a lot of people who made the big decisions in the company.
I'm very glad I shielded you from that. It makes me feel like it was the horribleness was kind of worth it. And I can say that's why Daddy drank. He's protecting you from the bad man.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I remember hearing that refrain several times. Oh, man.
I started going to conventions a long, long time ago. And, you know, as I continued doing that, as I was working on the magazine, you could just, from year to year, see more and more visibly how the demographic of anime fandom was shifting. So I tried to keep the magazine shifting in that direction as well, which meant more and more often writing for, like, a 13-year-old girl audience. But, you know, that's what the fans were becoming. And, you know, we wanted to pay attention to them as well, especially since, you know, the female market was so underserved still at that time by the comic book industry. So it was entertaining to try to do that and still work with the Japanese companies. We did, you know, as we got a little bit more famous, we got to interview more and more famous people, which was really cool. Although I will never forgive Wizard for canceling the magazine before that last issue hit the press, because it had some pretty damn good interviews in it, including one that I did with Takashi Miike, because I believe he was doing the Yatterman movie at the time. He was doing press for it in the States.
Oh, right.
I got to just go into a room and sit like 2 feet from Takashi Miike and just talk to him. And it was pretty awesome.
Right. But, and then you sat through that movie and were like, well,
that takes it all away.
So what were the final days like? Because you were there up until the very, very end. Like, what were those last days like? When did you get the news? How did that come down the pike?
Well, the writing was on the wall long, long before they actually canned us. Even though we were still selling ads fairly robustly until the end, it was a bit more obvious, you know, that we were going to be canceled eventually. You know, they started cutting back on our budget. They started having us let people go.
They canceled Inquest first, right?
Yeah, well, they started canceling magazines. So Inquest went, and then they cut back our budgets. They had us let people go. And then they were so... The thing about them was that they were always so avoidant. Like, they didn't want to deal with anything that might be unpleasant. So even though...
But they were so unpleasant. They were so constantly unpleasant, so they just had no spine for dealing with that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I was actually forced to let some of the people go myself, which was not my job, and which was the last thing in the world that I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's it.
But there were, like, you know, they would put it off, and then it would be the day that it was supposed to happen, and I'd get a call from, you know, Wizards... editor-in-chief say, oh, I can't make it to the office today, you know, you're going to have to do it. yeah, that was so... I knew that things were rocky because Wizard itself was having trouble selling ads, which was odd because we were not having as much trouble selling ads as they were. But that was their baby, so I knew that we were going to be canceled before they were ever canceled.
Of course, yeah.
And actually, in the end, how it came down was after they had announced that they wanted to move the office to New York City, even though the vast majority of the employees of all of the different magazines and areas of the company lived and owned homes in that specific area, and it would have just been financially impossible for them to commute to the city every day. They kept saying, oh, it's the best thing for our employees. We love our employees so much. And I called them out on that on more than one occasion and got myself in trouble. But that's what I tend to do. Right before the move was supposed to happen, and while my staff was on vacation, I was called in upstairs to an office to be informed that the magazine was being canceled and everyone was being let go. And here's this. And by the way, if you want any kind of severance pay, here's the legal agreement that you have to sign. And I think I still have a copy of that somewhere just for a laugh every now and then when I want to read it, because it was fairly ridiculous. But that was just the final blow for me. I had been under so much stress the last couple of years, just keeping the magazine going under their increasing demands for like anime presence at the conventions. But having them cancel the magazine while at that point I was down, it was down to me and two staffers, Angela Hansen, who had started off as an intern for us and had proven herself very worthy of getting a full-time position, and Matt Sukovich, who had really only been there for a short time. It was down to us, just the three of us. And Angela and Matt were both on vacation, and they didn't even know that they were on vacation. So Angela actually found out that the magazine got canceled on the internet. That was the first that she heard of it. And then we had to call Matt and let him know while he was on vacation. That was also very special.
Fuck, man. That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, awful is a word that briefly sums it up, yes.
This is terrible.
It was unpleasant. And I think I was actually losing hair towards the end,
which
for a lady is no good.
Yeah.
It has all come back, but, the stress was fairly intense.
Yeah, no shit, man.
Yeah. But I loved it. And I met a lot of fantastic people while I was working there, some of whom I'm still in contact with. Arlene used to be a designer for the whole, the company overall, and she actually freelanced for one of my other companies for a while. I ran into Fred, believe it or not. I ran into Fred at Toy Fair this year. Apparently, he's publishing Valiant Comics now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. He sent me a big box of comics, which was pretty sweet.
Fred being one of the major muckety-mucks from upstairs that frequently made our lives hell.
There was a lot of that to go around.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. He was not the only one. Like that, he was a nice guy, but man, some of the decisions that came down from there. Yeah, so I mean, this is sort of a tale of being slowly crushed to death by a management that didn't really appreciate what we were doing, even when we were bringing them a profit. It just never seemed to click with them. Like, it wasn't there wasn't Venom. Todd McFarlane wasn't involved in it, and so they didn't know what it was and didn't care to try and understand it. But aside from all that, like, we can look back on this and have a sense of pride about what we made. And
oh God, yes. One of the things that I will be proud of until the day that I die is issue number 50. Where I actually worked with Gainax for we did a custom illustration for the cover of Evangelion. And that was, you know, for an older school anime fan, that was fucking fantastic. Just to be able to say, can you draw them? Can Rei be standing in the front and she's holding the cake that says 50 on it? And then Asuka is kind of behind her. That was really fun and it turned out great. And, I am very proud of that.
We had a few of those actually. There was one I remember, was a big deal. We had a custom illustration for Cowboy Bebop on the cover.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, which I think, now, correct me if I'm wrong here, that was like the first new piece of Cowboy Bebop art that had been drawn for anything since like the movie came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. You're right.
The movie, of course, being Today's Hottest Kind of
Today's
Cool.
Today's Hottest Kind of Cool. Thank you very much. I really didn't think I was going to do this without that coming up at least once.
You know, right. Hey, you're on the Blu-ray still, so.
Indeed. Indeed. I still have my poster with the other dude's quote, with definitely misspelled, so that's always awesome.
yeah, right. I remember that. You know, it's funny, like, I torture you with that still to this day, and as karma, people torture me with the one of, if not the greatest anime ever on Full Metal Alchemist, which...
You had very strong feelings about Full Metal Alchemist when it first came out.
Hey, it led to some pretty good articles. In fact, like one of the thing that I'm simultaneously most proud of and most disappointed in is I did a hellacious interview with the screenwriter on Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
Seiji Mizushima, and that guy's crazy. And I had him going on and on and on about all the political significance that's in the show, and he was very direct about all of it. And it was a kick-ass interview, and Sony made us take it all out.
All the good
stuff got yanked out of that interview. It's still a pisser. I've mentioned it several times, but that is simultaneously like, I that's the one thing I lament, is that I don't have the original text, because I would just publish it. So I guess to wrap up here, everyone's kind of landed on their feet. There's no sob stories here. Summer, you're still out in the area. You're still on the East Coast, making a go of it out there, still a professional writer. And
oddly enough, starting to work with anime again.
Right.
The company that I work with now just got the Yu-Gi-Oh! License. So,
all right.
Working with Konami, and you remember Yumi Hawashi, Rob?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Really? Hawashi-san?
That is an in-joke that we can't share,
but it's
hilarious. Hilarious.
Yeah, and for the past few months, I've had the distinct pleasure of working with Sanrio, because we have the Hello Kitty license also.
Nice.
Working with Sanrio.
These companies who are so very, very loose and accepting of how their properties are treated. They're just chill.
Right.
Oh, so laid back.
Yeah.
So laid back. But in their defense, the Japanese company system is based on the principle of shit rolls downhill. So all it takes is one at the top who is very tight, and then that person will make life miserable for the person below them, whose job then it is to make life miserable for their subordinates. So
indeed,
it goes on, but it's different. But yeah, so I'm still writing professionally. I still love what I do. I was so traumatized by the end of Anime Insider and how they took care of that I didn't actually speak of anime or watch anime for, I think it was 3 solid years.
Wow.
With the exception, I made an exception for you, Zach, for the anime previews that I wrote that year. I think it was in the fall.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. I've gotten back into it a little bit lately, but it was how they ended it was just so infuriating that I left anime for a very long time.
Wow, and Rob, obviously you went on to fame and not exactly fortune at Topless Robot, obviously. That did very well for you, and now you're senior editor at IO9, so you certainly it was a little rocky there for a bit. But
indeed. But I'm still getting paid to write, and now it's weird because Topless Robot was very big blog, and this is I would say it's more like Anime Insider, but trying to be broader as opposed to just write specifically my nonsense, having an actual audience in mind, tailoring stuff to them. So it's neat. I'm enjoying it very much so.
And never forget that you were once paid to bring the world Fan Fiction Friday.
True. And now I don't have to do it, which is even better. So I spare myself that misery.
Summer's working with Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm getting shit on in the forums. The circle is unbroken.
I'm doing Walking Dead and getting shit more too. So if we're pissing someone off, I think we're doing something right.
Exactly. We actually don't have a ton of Twitter questions, but I just took a few because this is, like I said, it's kind of ancient history for most people, but I think it's good to get it down on the record just in case. We've talked about this a lot, but Redneck Otaku asks, how supportive was Wizard of, I assume he just means management, of anime at the peak of Anime Insider?
Well, they were trying to capitalize on the peak of Anime Insider, but they didn't really know how to do that. Or care to learn how to do that. I'm, of course, referring specifically to the kind of managerial upstairs areas. The guys at Wizard itself, the magazine, were fantastic. And even when you wanted to vent about some bullshit coming down the pipeline, you could just go into their offices and just explode, and they would just not bat an eye. It was great.
Thank you. They had their own shit to deal with, so they, for all that they got more support, they also got more attention from terrible people, so, mm-hmm. Six of one, half dozen of the other.
Yeah.
Right. And we got a question about this, and I can't find it, so apologies to the person who sent it in, but we were asked about our proudest moments working on the magazine, and Summer, you mentioned yours, and I mentioned mine. But Rob, you didn't. You had a lot of pretty special moments working on Anime Theater. Does one stick out to you as like your proudest moment?
I'm not sure proudest moment, but one of my favorite moments is when I went to Japan and interviewed Akitaro Daichi, Kodocha and Fruits Basket director, and he was just a cool dude. I think he and I got in a big discussion about comedy, and we both wanted Mamoru Oshii to go back to comedy because we both thought the Ghost in the Shell movies were way too dour, especially in that second one. And we got to come out and get a discussion about a recent series, which Oshii had directed at the beginning. And I showed him my lung tattoo, and he was awed and took a picture, and it was just really, really cool, really neat moment. I was like, this is really cool. So, trying to think about articles. It's been a long time. Although I do tell you, I really loved coming back to do Animail. That was always my big regret when leaving, but I had never gotten to do it. So I really enjoyed being able to do that.
Awesome. Okay. And so it's fitting, I guess, that we wrap up here. Todd Ziolek, he sent a question about, and I remember this, Anime Insider's Cyber Catgirl mascot and why she was never actually used in the magazine. We did have a mascot thing that never made it into the magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to recall how that never worked out. I know we got all the way to color choices. And I don't know what happened. I think the artist kind of flaked out, and I think we never decided. And I think we kind of realized that it was going to be a bad idea. It was going to open up a lot more problems. basically we were making it to have something to put on a t-shirt and realized the mascot was going to be a lot more work than benefit it was going to give us. So
I have to say, I'm glad.
I those images somewhere.
I'm kind of glad that didn't.
I am too. It seemed like a good idea, and then as it went on, it was like, really? Yeah, it's a good thing it didn't happen at the end. So, but I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Now I've really got to figure out where the hell that thing went out.
Ah, memories.
Indeed. I'm looking at the file, I went on my computer, there she is.
Really?
I'm going to blow your mind. Well, we had a bunch of things, but I'm going to shock everyone to say that we ended up with a cat girl. So, that's, yeah.
Wasn't it kind of a Chobits ripoff sort of a thing? Like, I don't remember what it, I remember some kind of headgear.
Yeah, the headgear was like cat ears. So, I mean, it went more cat, more Chobitsy than Nuku Nuku or whatever the hell that was. So, but it really did not get very far.
Yeah.
So, we never ended up deciding on anything. And again, totally for the best.
That was in consideration around the redesign, right?
Yes, yes. Which I should say the redesign, man, that I loved how that magazine looked. Arlene So did it almost single-handedly. Just love the design of that magazine. That was probably my proudest moment at all together, honestly, when we somehow gotten it together to gone from Anime Invasion and its weird like non-manga coverage and price guide to be a monthly magazine that looked great, great content, great staff. That first issue was definitely my proudest moment.
All right, guys. Well, that wraps it up. I feel like we've given basically as thorough a history of this whole period as we possibly can. Minus any mention of me terrorizing you guys with Super Monkey Ball and Karaoke Revolution.
Oh, my God. You were the worst. You were the worst. Wow. You were Super Monkey Ball. My God.
Continued to trick us into playing Monkey Ball with you.
That lasted like a year. And then when you finally wised up and realized I was just going to scream drunkenly, Gon Gon always wins at you for like an hour.
Well, you would get drunk and belligerent until we played you, and then you would get more drunk and belligerent. I think we somehow thought that we would shut you up by playing, but no, you got infinitely worse every single time.
Oh, I was a monster. No, I was a total monster when I copped to it. But anyway, I can't thank you guys enough for coming on and reminiscing and telling these stories. It's ancient history at this point. It's hard to think about the fact that as of this year, it was 10 years ago when I even started thinking, when I even started working on the magazine. It's a decade. And it's just, I think it's important sometimes to, you know, have a record of all this history and I can't thank you enough for stopping by and taking a trip down memory lane. So huge thanks to both of you.
Absolutely. We're happy to be here.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Rob and Summer for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a little review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.